Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
We conclude this hour with some thoughts on a condition that was given a name by the experiences of military veterans from World War I, when it was called combat fatigue or shell shock, until today when it is called PTSD. When Jackie Kennedy witnessed the shooting death of her husband, JFK, the president, it was a moment that changed the world, but it also changed her in a way not well understood, hidden as she was behind the veils of mourning or the glamour of her later life. In the new book, Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy Onassis, The Untold Story, author Barbara Leeming compassionately helps us to understand the emotional struggles of Jackie Kennedy following the assassination in Dallas by comparing her to a victim of combat few of us can understand.
One of the things that we have to remember when we're talking about Jackie and PTSD is that until 1980, there was no diagnosis for anyone of post-traumatic stress disorder. But what was very strange about her situation was, and the reason that I was pointed to it in the first place, was Harold Macmillan, the former British Prime Minister, wrote a letter to Jackie in 1964, right after the assassination of Jack Kennedy. And Macmillan had been wounded in the First World War very seriously at the Battle of the Somme. And in that letter, he was talking to Jackie and comparing what had happened to her in Dallas with the experience of a soldier, and specifically of himself, in war. And Jackie's response to that, because I saw her letters responding, was to say, "This is the most important letter of my life." Years later, I think that one of the things that was very difficult for her was that she was being treated like a grief-stricken widow. She was being told, even by somebody like Bobby Kennedy in those first couple of years after the assassination, "Get over it, Jackie, get over it." With grief, you do get over it. But with PTSD, you're literally living in the past. And in the period of that spring after the assassination, Jackie was endlessly in that car in Dallas. She was endlessly talking about, well, what if I had heard the shot first? I should have been able to save him. Why couldn't I save him? I mean, she's very, very much reacting to that kind of thing.
Talking like a Secret Service agent. I should have taken the bullet.
Absolutely. It should have been me. Why, you know, and that's one of the things that's so terrifying about trauma, because it tells you that you are helpless. There really is nothing that you can anticipate. It's random. Things like this happen, and we don't like to think about that. And it's right then that she starts talking to the priest who Bobby has provided her with, who's thinking she's grieving, and she's saying to him, "I want to kill myself." Well, part of why she wants to kill herself is that not just because she's lost Jack, but she can't live with being in that car for another day. I mean, it's clear in her letters, and I worked with a lot of her letters for this thing, that the thing that kept her from killing herself were the children. I mean, she keeps saying, "That's the only reason I have to live."
Although she explores, and again, this is a revelation to read, she explores in her discussions with herself and friends about suicide that maybe the kids would be better off without her, because she is in this state of agony.
Yes, and also not only is she in that state, but she's in a state of rage. The only emotion that's available to you when you're suffering from PTSD to the degree that she is to just simply numb yourself to everything except anger, because anger is what you use to protect yourself. So she's living in a house with people around her. And I think that's one of the things that for me was so heartbreaking. One of the things that you see when you see somebody have a flashback, such as Jackie was having, is that for someone who you care about, they're not there with you. They're someplace else. I mean, I remember Teddy White, who was the Life magazine journalist who did the Camelot, the famous Camelot interviews, just days after the assassination with Jackie. And in his notes, he says, you know, he calls it the blood scene. He said, "When the blood scene takes over with her, she's not talking to me. She's not there with me." And you could feel how unsettling that was for him. When they're in that, you can't help them.
And one of the things that you write here that resolves such a riddle for me, and really for the first time. We've always heard about Jackie's resilience, and we've heard about the Kennedys' resilience. But the story here, which explains Onassis to me for the first time, is Bobby Kennedy's get over it. The Kennedy sense of we have this curse, you stiffen up and you take it, mm-hmm. is a continuation of Jackie's trauma. And in a sense, she has to go be with Onassis to get away from the Kennedys, because the Kennedys are just continuing the agony for her.
They can't help her. And I mean, that's one of the things that you see with Jackie over and over again. I mean, because she's the woman who was on the back of that car trying to get out in a moment of absolute helplessness. I mean, that picture in the Zapruder film shows you what the worst moment of trauma is like. You can't do anything. And your instinct then is to constantly go for a protector. And so she went for Bobby, who was supposed to protect her, couldn't, and made things worse inadvertently, I think, but did exactly for the reasons you're saying. Then for Robert McNamara. But when Bobby was killed, the letters to McNamara that she wrote after Bobby's assassination, I can remember sitting in my office and just tears streaming down my face. It's just before she marries Onassis, and she's talking about, well, we are comrades in love and blood, and I'm going to be annihilated, and I know I'm going to be annihilated, and I have nothing, I have no hope. The only thing that I can do is to accept that it's going to happen. And then she's writing to Joe Alsop at the same period and saying, I will never love anyone again. I will never allow myself to care about anyone again. But if they're coming for me, I've got to find some kind of safety as much as I can, even though I'm going to die anyway. Mm-hmm. And Onassis is that. He has his own planes. He has his own island. He has his own guards. He has as much money as anybody could have. She never pretended to marry him for love. She married him for safety for herself and her children, and it didn't work because no one can protect you.
In general, would you say that this is someone who used her intellectual brilliance to try to fight PTSD and ultimately couldn't?
I think she didn't know what it was. I think by 1980, when PTSD was a diagnosis, I think that she had sort of improvised a survival mechanism. Very simple things like establishing routines, like having a predictable life with work. She found that she was able to do things and that she wasn't as helpless as she thought she was. So in what for me was very interesting was that in a very strange way, the end of it is a kind of story of survival. It's a story of how much one person with an enormous amount of courage. And that was not how I thought of Jackie Kennedy, really. When I first started thinking about her, I thought of her in terms of, I don't know, dresses and stuff like that.
Princesses.
Yeah, and princes.
Pillbox
yeah,
hats.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I now think of her as one of the bravest women I've ever heard of. And she said, in 1980, somebody asked her at a dinner party what she thought was her greatest achievement. And I think they expected her to say, I restored the White House or I went to Paris or whatever. And she said, without a moment's hesitation, I kept my sanity.
Barbara Leeming is the author most recently of Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy Onassis, The Untold Story.